Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young here with Pete Ball. We're recording this on Saturday, September 28th, but by the time it comes out, the season will be over, sort of over. I guess there's probably going to be baseball on Monday at this point. We're still waiting to see officially, but most teams will be done for the season, but we'll see if Atlanta and New York are still playing, I guess.
Yeah, it looks like that's going to happen. It looks like that's going to have some playoff implications. So hopefully your leagues have wrapped up at this point and you don't have to worry about it. But if they haven't, then things could get a little interesting, I guess.
Yeah, most of my leagues, the season-long leagues are like a roto league, something like that, are using those Monday games because they're part of the season. My head-to-head leagues are all cutting off those games because the week is the week rather than needing those to be part of the season. So it's sort of it's going to be interesting. The Keeper Cup Listener League head-to-head is coming down to the wire here. As of right now, I should go back and check because it changes very quickly. I'm actually down 7-3 right now, which is as far back as I've been. But I'm down by one home run. I'm down by, like, ERA is 3.05 to 3.05. It's just that his 3.05 is slightly better than my 3.05, apparently. So, if I throw a good third of an inning, if he gives up a run, that could flip. And I think I'm going to need a little help here because my offense has not been good. I don't act like one home run doesn't sound like a lot. I don't think I can actually catch him in home runs. My offense has been that bad. So I'm going to need somebody to step up and hit a couple home runs. And I need him to throw a bad inning. I think that's my only path forward. The one thing working my advantage here is the tiebreaker is regular season record. And so if I can get it back to 5-5, that's good enough. But I'm not feeling great about it, Pete. I'm not feeling great about it.
Yeah, no, that's a tough league. I was sad to get bumped last week, but hey, man, it's fantasy baseball until the last day. You can't ask for more than that. You're still in it.
Yeah.
And we only have like a day of baseball left. So just enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah. And it's given me something to do this weekend while the Guardians play meaningless baseball with the Astros. Both those teams are locked into their spots. That may not be entirely true. Because theoretically the Guardians could move into a tie with the Yankees today for the top seed and then could pass them tomorrow. The Yankees have the tiebreaker there, but I've been saying all along, like, I don't like the top seed would be nice, but like my actual big focus for the Guardians this weekend is like, don't show the Astros anything, which, seems weird. You're not game planning. Like, this isn't like football or basketball where you're running sets and plays and stuff. But like, if you think that the best way to handle the top of their order in a late inning situation is by having Hunter Gaddis come out and pitch in a certain way to them, don't do that this weekend, right? Like, let that go. Like, don't let them face other pitchers. Have pitchers face guys they're not going to face next week if we end up back in a matchup with Houston, because right now that's on the table. So yeah, that's what I've been watching. If it isn't for, frantically checking the stats in this one head-to-head league.
Well, speaking of MLB playoffs, I've been out of it the last couple of weeks. As folks know, I coach middle school golf. I've talked about it before, and that has just been like so consuming. And most of my fantasy leagues have ended. A lot of them didn't end well this year, but I could not believe that the Detroit Tigers made the Major League Baseball playoffs. And then I saw a tweet, and I was trying to find it. I can't find it, of what the division would look like if the White Sox were not in that division. And it is like, why the hell couldn't the Red Sox be in the AL Central this year? I feel like the Red Sox would be like 95 game winners and I would have October baseball, but instead the White Sox lifted up four teams to be well above 500. But the Detroit Tigers are in the Major League playoffs. What the heck is going on since I stopped paying attention?
Yeah, they've been unbeatable lately. I mean, just they've been playing incredible baseball. They've been easily the best team in baseball for the last like 6 weeks.
Who needs Jack Flaherty?
It is really crazy to think like they're going to go to the playoffs and they're going to be like, man, it'd be really nice to have Flaherty starting game two. Right. But
yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Yeah. So it is episode 152 of the Keeper Cup podcast, which means we're looking at jersey number 52 to kick things off here. And I mean, this is an easy one for me, because in terms of players to wear this jersey for an extended period of time, there's one guy who's just clearly much better than everyone else, and that's CC Sabathia. And he played, you know, he came up with Cleveland. He was there for years. He was, when I was in college and a journalism major and trying to cover sports, I did an internship in Cleveland, and one of my first sort of athletes I interviewed was CC Sabathia when he was a rookie. So this is easy for me, but you have other names? Anyone else you'd throw in there?
No, I'm with you on CC. Even as a Yankee and me as a Red Sox fan, I loved CC Sabathia. That half season in Milwaukee, I mean, that should have been the Cy Young winner. That was some of the best baseball I've ever seen pitched in my life. I guess the only other name that sticks out for me, you know, thinking of fantasy relevancy during my fantasy playing career, Yoenis Cespedes was just freaking awesome. It really didn't work out here in Boston. He had a bad time. Doesn't speak well of it, but there was a time period where Yoenis Cespedes, it was a short stint, it was really mostly with the Mets, where he was one of the premier players in our game. So he kind of sticks out, but he is nowhere near the level of CC Sabathia. So if you want to see some amazing throws from the outfield, from the warning track to home plate, spend some time on YouTube with Yoenis Cespedes.
Yeah, that dude could throw. So I think we're good with CC. He can have this one. CC, if you're out there listening, you're still one of my favorites, despite the fact that you left Cleveland. I understand just the way it goes. I left Cleveland too. So, but we got to talk head-to-head heroes. And, you know, I always pull up this you know, last 7 days leaderboard on Fangraphs when we talk about this. And oftentimes, you know, the guys at the top of that list are like, some random dude who had a good week. And this week it's like Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge are number 1 and 2 on that list. So not quite as random. I'm going to go a little bit further down that list, but still not a totally random guy. And the guy I'm going to pick up here is Wyatt Langford. Langford, 3 home runs this week, 6 runs, 7 RBIs. He also stole 3 bases. He has a 304 average, and that's with a 267 BABIP. What he's doing is walking a lot, 14.8%, not striking out very much, 18.5%. And that's allowing him to put the ball in play without, you know, it's allowing him to keep his average up without needing a high BABIP, I guess is what I should say, because he's not striking out that often and he's hitting a lot of home runs. Those are good things. So I think he's just worth mentioning because, you know, before the season in the Auto News Slack community, there was a lot of hype around Langford. Not that there wasn't elsewhere. There was a lot of hype around him everywhere. But there was a lot of talk about, like, what would you pay for him if he was a free agent at your auction? People were saying, like, $40. Like, he's a star, right? Yeah, and I get why people were saying that. And then he spent most of this season being useless. Just, you couldn't play him in fantasy. He was bad. And he's such a great example of the difference over the course of a season between redraft and keeper leagues. Because in like May or June, if you were in a redraft league and you were like, forget it, I'm over it, I'm cutting this guy, that was a totally defensible position. It was probably the right thing to do. In a keeper league, you couldn't really do that. At least I wouldn't do that. I would be happy to sit on him. I did in a couple leagues. I traded him in one. Where I was competing and I was willing to make that trade. But in general, I sat on him. So I was like, I know I can't use him right now. I still believe the future is really bright. And now we're seeing it. It's not just this week. He's been much, much better lately overall. If I go pull up his splits real quick here, he has a 123 WRC plus in the second half. So most of that is what he's done in September. It's been mostly the last month. He wasn't great in August overall, but that overall second half line is, man, it's really, really good. The ISO's up, the walk rate is up, and I think he's going to be a star. I still really believe that he's going to be a huge success. And so I hope if you had him in a keeper league, you waited. Because if you moved on because you were like, forget it, he's not helping me now, I think you're going to have some big regrets next year.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely for sure. That would have been way too quick to move on from Wyatt Langford. He's a great example of like a few things for me. But number one is that I'm done drafting prospects high, because as awesome as he's probably going to be and as hot as he's been lately, you're right. He was useless for most of the season, and he was going as a top 100 pick. Like, what are we doing? And yet at the same time, if you somehow still drafted really well, despite making that particular mistake of drafting Wyatt Langford, and you held on to him all this time, and you made your league's playoffs, well, now you're viewing him as like a league winner, because he hasn't just been good the last 7 days. He's really been good since the fantasy playoffs have started. Langford is really having an interesting fantasy rookie season. Still so young, just 22 years old, moved so quickly through the minor leagues that some bumps were to be expected. And again, I have no interest. Like, the Red Sox have two guys that are going to be right on the cusp and right in these conversations during draft time next season. And that's Christian Campbell, who won Baseball America Minor League Player of the Year, who was the pick we used from the pick we got from the Xander Bogaerts signing with San Diego, and Roman Anthony. And I'm not going to touch either of them at all. And not just because they're Red Sox, but because they're prospects. I made that mistake with Langford in a few spots. TGFBI comes to mind, and I just can't do it anymore. But he has had a pretty good last week.
Yeah, he's been just on fire lately. So hope you held. Hope you held. But Pete, what about you? Who's your head-to-head hero?
Yeah, so I was going to go with this Jonah Bride guy, but I don't really know anything about him. So I'm going to go with Jonathan Aranda, who has been a little bit frustrating because he's not a good fielder. And so he's not really high in prospect reports or in prospect rankings or anything like that. But the dude has an absolute bat. He broke out in 2022. He led the minor leagues in batting average and a few other categories. And he just flat out hits. He's put together some monster seasons in the minor leagues, but he's had a hard time breaking through with Tampa Bay. Number one, because of how loaded they've kind of been with, like, you know, infielders who can play with DH options, but also because when he's had his time in the major leagues, he hasn't hit. So that's a major issue. But at 26 years old, it looks like he's had an extended run now with the Rays over the last 7 days. It actually hasn't been that great. He's only hitting 260, but he did have a series against Toronto last weekend where he hit a home run in every game of that series. And he's just a player to keep an eye on for me, because it kind of reminds me of, I guess, Juan Yepes, who didn't really work out. I mean, there was a stretch where Juan Yepes was pretty useful this season, but when Juan Yepes was really hot, I think he was like in the Arizona Fall League or something, he really tore it up. He was a player that guys were getting excited about who kind of fell through the cracks because he's not someone who's high up on prospect rankings, but he swings a good bat. And that kind of reminds me of Aranda. So now those Juan Yepes hopes that I had a couple years ago, I'm now placing on Jonathan Aranda, and I find this extended run with the Rays to be pretty enticing, pretty interesting. Something to watch here down the last 2 days and to examine his major league experience here.
Yeah, I mean, he's been good, and there is a lot in his background, even though he hasn't been sort of an elite prospect. There's a lot in his background that's interesting, and makes him, I think, worth a look. I do want to talk quickly about Bride, just because you mentioned him, and he has been great. And I picked him up, I don't know, a few weeks ago in one league where I was just like, I was desperate
he's
for
been
third base.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I will say he's always had good. Not always. That's not true. He hasn't always had good minor league numbers. He was, you know, decent in the minors, had a really good double A season in 2021, but he was 25 years old. And then 2022 and 2023, and then again this year, has been excellent in triple A, but again, 26, 27, 28 years old, those seasons. He had very limited major league playing time before this year, about, let's see, 293 plate appearances coming into this season. He's got 264 plate appearances this season. He was terrible coming into this season. So much so that his overall line as a major leaguer is still well below average, despite the fact that this year has been excellent. I am just never really a big believer in guys who have super late breakouts like this. It can happen, but it's, I don't know. It's not very often that somebody shows up at 28 years old. He turned 28 last December, so he'll be 29 this year. It's not often someone shows up at 28 years old without much pedigree, without much success, with a spotty minor league track record, to be honest. Like I said, he had some good years in there, and there were a lot of good years, but they all started when he was old for his level. And then suddenly becomes a star, or even a particularly useful player. And like, you know, the example people always bring up for these late bloomers is someone like JD Martinez. JD Martinez was 2 years younger than this when he had his breakout. Justin Turner comes up. Let's see, how old was he? He was younger as well. Pull him up real quick. Hold on. Turner is maybe the better example, because he was in fact 29 when he had his big breakout. It was his age 29 season. He is the rare case, though, right? And when Turner broke out, it was a swing change. I would be curious to see if that's what's happened with Bride here, or if it's just a hot streak. And I kind of think it's just a hot streak. So yeah,
I'm going to invoke a different name here. I'm going to invoke a different name here. And if I hear anybody compare this guy to JD Martinez, that's not what you were doing, because you were not right in the camp. But if I hear someone do that, I'm taking away their fantasy playing privileges. But Frank Schwindel is the name that comes to mind for me. I knew it was some corner infielder on the Cubs. I had to look him up. Like, no exit velocity at all. Tiny little barrel rate coming out of nowhere down the stretch in a random season. That feels like exactly what's happening here with Jonah Bride. So, but hey, if you've had him, you don't care if he's Frank Schwindel 2.0 or more likely Frank Schwindel 90 million.0. He's had the hot streak. He's been unbelievable. Last 7 days, 4 home runs.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I would do that. I would then spend some time in the off season looking into what happened, finding out maybe there is a swing change, maybe there's something I'm missing. And I haven't done enough of a deep dive, to be honest, to really say whether or not there's something I'm missing.
The numbers are so close to Frank Schwindel.
Are they? I mean, the other name that comes to mind is Joey Meneses, who we just went through this with a couple of years ago.
I was thinking of him
as
well. Yeah.
And so, yeah, he may be, you know, he may be the Justin Turner of this group, right? It is possible that he is the guy who is, you know, breaks the mold the way that Turner did. It's just so rare for that to happen. It's not a good bet. And so, you know, in your keeper leagues, if you're riding Bride right now, like, I mean, you're listening to this on Monday, the season's over. So I guess the ride is over at that point. But there's no reason to, like, you don't have to bail on him immediately. You can, hey, hold him through. If you're not in a new league, hold him through arbitration. Maybe somebody put some dollars on him. Maybe you shop him in the offseason. As of right now, I don't think I want this guy on my roster when we hit opening day next year.
So that was going to be my question before we moved on real quick. So assuming Bride and Aranda, people got them for this nice run, maybe they're helping you win a championship, you got them both for a dollar. Are either of those making your team next year for $3?
Aranda is.
Okay.
I just like the track record and the pedigree better.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, but I don't think I'd keep Bride for $3.
Yeah. Nope, I agree with that. So let's get into the meat of the episode. The last couple weeks, we've gone through hitters and then pitchers who had breakout seasons and talked about whether we were buying high or selling high on those players. This year, we're going to do the opposite. We're going to look at guys who fell off quite a bit this year. We are again using Autonew Fangraphs points scoring as just a shorthand to identify those players. And so what I did is I pulled up a list of guys who had at least 50 at-bats each this year and last year. Why at-bats instead of plate appearances? Because the data set I pulled had at-bats and not plate appearances, and I'd already done a bunch of work, and I didn't want to go back and start over. It doesn't really matter for what we're doing here. It doesn't have to be that precise. But at least 50 at-bats both this year and last year. Had a points per game. We'll start with the hitters. A points per game over 5 points per game last year, and they are under 5 points per game this year. And these are the biggest drop-offs. So the reason that I did both the biggest drop-offs and that they're under five is there are some guys that were on this list, and I'll throw some names out there for you first. We can talk about these guys quickly, Pete, if you think there's anyone worth discussing here. But Ronald Acuña Jr. was one of the biggest droppers in production this year, even during the time he was healthy. And then he got hurt, obviously. But even when he was healthy, his points per game was way down. Jose Altuve is pretty far down from where he was last year, but still productive. Matt Olson, Freddie Freeman. There's a bunch of these guys. To me, you can cut these guys out because for the most part, you're looking at like, I don't know, Corey Seager also on that list. Like at some point when you're that good, you can have a merely good season instead of a great season. And you're like the biggest fallers there are, but I'm not looking at like, oh, Freddie Freeman took a big fall this year. He's like way down my draft board. Like, yeah, maybe I'd knock him a little bit, but there's not any real big change there. Do you feel like from that list, Acuña, Seager, Altuve, Olson, Freeman, I don't remember if there's anyone else I mentioned in there, anyone from that group who was down but not bad, that you're like, I might drop this person down my draft board a bit?
That's a tough question, just because, I mean, obviously I need to see where they're going to be going first before I decide like if I'm ahead or not on them. Because obviously compared to where all five of those guys are going this year, I can confidently tell you I'll be drafting them all at least slightly lower. Right.
Right.
The only two that stick out to me that I think are worth spending 30 seconds on is just Freeman and Altuve, because they were both awesome. They weren't as good as they were last year, obviously, which is why they're on this list. They both still had really good seasons, but they're both also old. And so seeing both their age going up, which it does for everybody, but seeing where their ages are at and seeing their production decline, it's just a combination that makes me a little bit worried. This sounds crazy, but maybe more so for Freeman than for Altuve, just because Altuve has made a career out of getting so much out of like not great exit velocities, you know, et cetera. With that said, he's dealt with a fair share of injuries. Small size might not age as well. That's my long way of saying I'm not worried about either of these guys, but I'm less likely to draft them in 2025 than I was in 2024 because they're old now and their production is slipping. So I don't want to be left holding the bag.
That makes sense. I'm with you. And the guys that did make this list, there are some guys who fall into a similar category, I think, of sort of, let's call them established veterans who you're like, yeah, this guy should be good every year, but they have fallen from being good to actually being bad. These are players who, like, using Seager, Altuve, Freeman, those guys as an example, if you drafted them and then felt like at the beginning of the season, man, they're not playing well, and cut them, you probably regret that. No, they didn't produce exactly what you expected, but they were good players, and what you got off the wire was probably worse. There's some guys here. Marcus Semien, Ozzie Albies, Luis Robert, JD Martinez, and Bo Bichette. They're really the names that sort of stand out from this list. So Bichette last year, 5.85 points per game. This year, 3.04. Martinez, JD Martinez, 6.49 last year, 4.43 this year. Luis Robert, 6.07 last year, 4.08 this year. Semien, 6.34 last year, 4.42 this year. And Albies, 6.41 last year, 4.57 this year. All of those guys, again, Bichette, JD Martinez, Luis Robert, Marcus Semien, Ozzie Albies. I could probably even add Adolis Garcia, but let's leave him out for now. All of those guys, had you drafted them and then said, I'm not feeling it, and cut them, you could have picked up something better on the wire or had something on your bench that was a better option to start than those guys. Like they went from being all-star caliber performers for your fantasy team to being bad, especially in this format. So, Pete, looking at that list, how many of those guys are you just like done with? Are you like, you know, again, Bichette, Semien, Albies, Robert, JD Martinez, are they just all forget it, I'm not drafting them guys for you?
A few of them are. JD, I love him. Thank you for 2018. He's cooked, finally. I'd be shocked if he's even drafted in most leagues next year. I don't know if that's unfair or not, but DH only, clearly showing signs of slipping. Strikeout rate's way up. I think JD is getting close to that time. He's going to hang him up. Semien will depend on the price, just because I have a hard time quitting so much durability and consistency. Not that the production this year obviously was consistent. That's why he's on this list. But I could see him easily just bouncing back with another like 20 seasons where he scores over 100 runs. Texas obviously wasn't very healthy this year. I think that hurt him. I think Wyatt Langford's going to be better, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I could see Semien having a little bit of a resurgence next year. So I'd be curious on the price. This list really is just full of players that are all just like so down for such different reasons. I've never really been big on Ozzie Albies, but now I might be, because I actually think he's going to start going for a lot cheaper than before. So the pendulum might swing in the other. He's still so young that, like, sure, I'll buy in on all of the Braves lineup next year, just because I feel like they're all going to be so much cheaper than they should be. Bo Bichette is interesting. I have always loved the player. At one point we were talking about him as a top five pick, and he's still super young. It's just now he's kind of been bad, or just not really that productive for a while, which is concerning. I think he's a low key kind of trade candidate for them. So maybe if he ends up somewhere new, that could be refreshing, but he's another guy who it's going to depend on the price. If we're picking in the hundreds, you know, pick 100 to pick 200, and I need speed in middle infield, I'll consider Bo Bichette, even though he really hasn't run this year. but he
hasn't, it's not just this year. He stole five bases this year. He stole five last year. He only stole 13 the year before.
Yeah. So much of stealing bases is intent. It's definitely not bankable. You know, I wouldn't draft him expecting 20 stolen bases.
Maybe 23 stolen bases with 12 times being caught over the last.
Well, that's not going to help.
Years. And the last 2 years, it's got the rate has gotten better. This year, five steals, was only caught once. Last year, five, he was caught three times. The year before, it was 13, caught eight times. I think he is sort of done being able to effectively steal bases. Now, I think that he also could easily, like, this year he has a total of 49 hits and 20 walks. He could double his number, more than double his number of times on bases next, not on base next year. And that alone might be enough to get him up closer to 10 steals. But I think that's sort of the, like, I don't think we're getting the 25 stolen bases back that we got in 2021. I think that's gone.
Maybe not. I mean, stolen bases are finicky. I think saying I would draft him for help with speed is obviously not an appropriate move, but it's Bo Bichette stealing 20 bases next year. It would be the least noteworthy, least surprising thing I think that could happen. I'm not ready to say I'm out on the player. It's just been so bleak now for two seasons that it's hard to get excited.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you look at his overall offensive profile, it's been, until this year, it was actually pretty steady. The stolen bases went way down, but like his WOBA by year, the last 4 years prior to this season, 353, 354, 347, 349. That's a real tight range for a four-year period. This year, it was 264. And I don't know. I want to believe he's going to bounce back to around what he was. And if you look at his season this year, like, he's always carried BAPIPs. High BAPIPs, 352, 339, 347, 355. It's 269 this year. He's always carried sort of mid-teens home run per fly ball rates, which isn't great, but it's good. It'll play, especially if you're putting the ball in play a lot, which he does. This year, it's 5.3%. His walk rate is actually up. It's the highest it's been since his 46-game sample as a rookie in 2019. His strikeout rate is a career low. So there are some interesting positive signs for Bo Bichette. He is hitting the ball less hard, but his hard hit rate was 44.9% last year. It's 43% this year. It's 46.4% for his career. The barrel rate is way down. And so, you know, can he hit the ball hard in the right launch angles again? I think he can. I think there's good reason to believe he can. And I think the the fact that he's walking almost more than he ever has in his career and striking out less than he ever has in his career, I think it's a pretty good sign. And it's not because, you know, it's not like he's making a ton of like bad contact out of the zone or something like that. It's just like his contact quality is down, and it makes me think there's like an injury or something nagging at him or something that's just not playing out the way it should. And I kind of think he'll be back next year. I don't think the speed's coming back, and I don't think he ever should have been taken as early as he was being taken. But I'm guessing that I'm going to be in on Bo Bichette at his new price next year.
I think I'm going to be in the same boat. It's just part of the problem with Bo Bichette the last couple of years is the consistency. And I think that's why we have this like warped view where in 2022, I mean, September saved his season. So when we bring up his like WOBA by year, it's like some of it is in the first half last year, his OPS was over like 850. And then in the second half, it was right around 700. This guy has gone through these stretches of like utter dominance and then stretches of just utter garbage. And now the most recent thing in our memory is garbage, which I guess means I'm going to be back in on him next year because the price is going to be good. But I don't know what to make of Bo Bichette at this point.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about some more players who had rough years. All right. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball here. We're talking about guys who have sort of fallen off. We started by talking about some established veterans. We did, you know, said JD Martinez probably done. Marcus Semien, you seem to be, and I agree with this, like he's just so consistent that if the price has to come down, but if it comes down, you'll be interested. Ozzie Albies, I agree with you on him as well. He's only 27. I still think he's a good player. I don't think he's suddenly terrible. And then we just talked extensively about Bo Bichette. The guy we haven't really talked about is Luis Robert Jr. Part of me wants to be like, well, how would you play if you had to be on the White Sox right now? But it's, you know, he's another guy who like he's been up and down at different times. Like he had a great 2021. He was not very good in 2022. He had a very good 2023. He's been awful this year. He's always had issues with strikeout rates in 2021 and 2022. It felt like he had sort of solved that. Last year, that strikeout rate went up to 28.9%. This year, it's 33.3%. He's striking out in a third of his at-bats or a third of his plate appearances. Last year, he also had a 23% home run per fly ball rate, which stands out from his career. It's 13.9%. You're like, wow, that's a big drop-off. Maybe it'll bounce back. He's only at 17.5% for his career. He's not a guy who carries like a super high home run per fly ball rate. And this season, like his barrel rate is still at double digits. It's 10%. His hard hit rate is 40.4. It's 41.9 for his career. His average exit velocity is higher than his career average. It's 90 this year. It's 89.5 for his career. I sort of think if he can't figure out the strikeouts and he can't make more consistently good contact, which I think is related to the strikeouts, I think he's going to really struggle. And I think he'll bounce back. Like he's been atrocious this year and he's just not as bad as this year has been. But I don't think, you know, he had 38 home runs last year. I don't see him getting anywhere close to that. And I think people think it was like this power, you know, a power hitter. He's a good, powerful, strong guy. That's the only season of his career that he's hit. So he hit 38. Not only has he never hit 35 in another season or 30 in another season or 25 or 20, unless he hits a home run today or tomorrow, last year will be his only season with 15 home runs. He has 14 this year. That's the second most he's hit in his career. Now, he does have the 2020 season where he hit 11 in a shortened season. So I'm fudging the numbers a little bit here. I'm dismissing that season, which isn't really a fair thing to do. But yeah, I mean, I think if you told me he's going to go 15 home runs, 20 steals next year, but with a low average and a pretty bad on base percentage, that sounds about right. And that's depending on the format, going to be a hard player to pick, especially if his value or his price is as high as it's been.
Yeah, I'm taking the complete opposite approach with Luis Robert. I think a year ago we viewed this as this guy was one of the five best prospects in baseball a few years prior. He broke out, looked awesome in the shortened season his first year, like you said. He turned 26 years old and went 38-20, and it just looked like, yep, okay, this makes sense. This guy's supposed to do this. And then he plays for the worst team ever and is injured. And that's not hyperbole. He plays for the worst team ever, and he's spending a lot of the season injured, and he has a bad year. Like, it really is that simple to me. Like, he brought up he hasn't had that many home runs before. He's never played over 100 games other than 2023 when he had that big breakout. And that's not to excuse the other poor ratio or percentages, I should say, and everything else in 2021 and 2022. But it's also not like he was bad during those games. I mean, in 2021, just his second year in the league, he had to have been, 23, 24 years old at most. He hit 13 homers with six steals in just 68 games. Like, I think there's so much talent there. If I was another major league GM, that's my first phone call this offseason. Like, give me that guy coming off this terrible season for the worst team ever. It really is that simple for me. I'm going to have, if that is the prevailing thought on Luis Robert, 15-20 with a terrible average, I will have Luis Robert in 19 leagues, even if I'm only in 18 leagues.
I go back and I look, and like, I think you have to expect him to miss a bunch of time, right? I mean, we're talking about, like I said, he's going to get to 100 games this year. It'll be the second time in his career he's done it. Now, it's been 2 years in a row, but he's got a history of missing a lot of time. The power output last year looks like a total outlier. The only other year he's had a WOBA over 330 was because he had a 394 BABIP in 2021. And he only played 68 games that year because of injury. If over time, that would have brought the BABIP down, which would have brought the WOBA down as well. So it's not that I think that he's going to be terrible. I just think he's going to be the guy he's been for his career. I think you can write. I think you can ignore.
So short, though. And that is assumed.
2,000 plate appearances.
But that's the thing I have trouble with is, like, I have a hard time projecting injuries. I think that's my number one thing.
Yeah.
And like, he's 27 years old. So me being like, yeah, no, he's totally going to sit for 50 games next year. Like, sure, that's been the trend so far. He's able to stay healthy for
It was Buxton.
Well, Buxton's a lot older than Luis Robert.
But we've been saying about Buxton for years.
I haven't. I've typically been in on Buxton, but he just finally beat me down. And if this guy's, 30, 31 years old and still has the same track record, I'll say it. But when Luis Robert is healthy, he's usually pretty good when he's not playing for the worst team in history. He's been healthy for most of two of his five seasons. So if he keeps up that rate, then yes, he's going to be like Byron Buxton. Actually, he'd still be somehow more healthy.
Still healthier than Buxton.
But like, I can't say that at 27 years old, especially everybody on that team. Nobody on that team gets a pass, and yet everybody on that team gets a pass because it was just that kind of year. So I will, again, I mean, if that is the projection next year, 15-20 with a bad average, I will have this guy everywhere.
His ADP on Fantrax this year was 12th.
Yeah, that's obviously way too high. Again, he went 38-20 or whatever it was, though.
So where are you? Oh, actually, he was the 12th outfielder. So he's not 12th. Take that back. I don't know why Fantrax doesn't want to show me overall ADP.
I mean, whatever it was, it was too high. He went 14.
So where are you taking him then, I guess? That's the question. Where would you take him this year?
Well, I guess my before I would answer that, I want to see where he's going. Like, if he's still going to be a fourth or fifth rounder, then that's too high for me because I don't need to.
Yeah. And right. So on Fantasy Pros, he was the 31st pick off the board on average. They do their consensus ADP pulling from a bunch of sources. So, what is that? Mid third round?
Yeah, that's obviously.
So how far does he have to fall for you to be like, yeah, I'm taking him everywhere?
I'm going to guess he's going, and I'm just guessing. I'm going to guess he's going like the sixth or seventh round next year in 12 team leagues. And if that's the case, yeah, I'm going to have a ton of shares of Luis Robert, an absolute massive treasure chest full of shares of Luis Robert.
Sixth, seventh round, putting that in like this year's context, late sixth into the seventh is guys like Yelich, Bregman, Real Muto, McLean, Christian Walker, Brian Reynolds.
Yeah, that's totally fine. Look, Brian Reynolds would be tough for me. He's grown on me a lot. Brian Reynolds is going to be going before Luis Robert, so this projection might be wrong. If Brian Reynolds is still sixth, seventh round, then Luis Robert's probably going to be eighth, ninth round, if not later. But yeah, too young and too closely removed from a 38-20 season.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Let's look at some other players here. Some guys who had, let's call them breakout seasons last year. And I'm gonna try to look at guys who had breakout seasons, but with, you know, a decent amount of playing time. We got some sort of rookie guys that we'll talk about in a little bit, but the breakout seasons, some guys who had some decent playing time last year. You know, Nolan Jones played most of the season. He was 6.72 points per game. He was 2.92 this year. Chaz McCormick, 5.68 points per game last year, 1.98 this year.
Devastating.
Christian Encarnacion Strand was up over 200 plate appearances last year. He had 5.04 points per game, 2.01 this year. Zach Geloff, 6.33 last year, 3.71 this year. Those are guys who are all over 200 plate appearances and broke out. Oh, one more to put on the list. Christopher Morel, 5.42 down to 3.49. So again, this list here, we have Nolan Jones, Chaz McCormick, Christian Encarnacion Strand, Zach Geloff, and Christopher Morel. I think those were the five names I mentioned. That sounds right-ish. Let's say that. Anyone on that list... So this list actually feel like, unlike the last list, which are guys who were established, had a track record, these are all guys who people were split this year, right? Like, I was pretty high on Jones. I know you were pretty high on McCormick. I was pretty high on Encarnacion Strand. I was pretty low on Christopher Morel. But, like, people were sort of, you know, had differing opinions on these players. And so they are likely going to come pretty cheap next year because, you know, half of the league was already out on them, and now half of the remainder are also going to be out on them. So where are you on these guys? Like, which of these guys are you like, no, I'm going to wait and see where that guy falls, and I'm going to jump around and take him?
Yeah, so I can start with the one that's cooked, and that's Chaz McCormick. I mean, he's the oldest of this bunch by a significant margin, I believe, and he barely gets playing time. It was a fun ride, man. I loved second half 2023 Chaz McCormick. We will remember you forever, but you are irrelevant now. Christian Encarnacion Strand, of course, I'm still in. I mean, injury, he's going to come back. He's still going to be hopefully a red and healthy. So, like, yeah, I'm not out on Christian Encarnacion Strand. Zach Geloff, see you later. I had my hesitations to begin with. It's just not there. It's not what it was, a fine line he was walking, and I'm out on Zach Geloff. It's the other two I find most interesting. Christopher Morel, I'm probably out on. I was never really that high on, kind of like you, but for a lot of the season this year, maybe I shouldn't say a lot, but for a portion of the year this year, if you had him in 5x5, he was somehow still useful. Like, he had a terrible season. He's going to finish under the Mendoza line, but like, he was stealing bases kind of for at least a little bit. He hit for some power. Like, he wasn't completely useless. And so the people that drafted him didn't get as shafted as the rest of them. And then there's Nolan Jones, who I said in April, I was like, man, you were a fool if you took Nolan Jones ahead of Mike Trout. Like, I could not understand the logic there. And then I was like, I'm the fool because Mike Trout once again got hurt, and that's why people were taking Nolan Jones ahead of him. And then Mike Trout in 1 month outperformed Nolan Jones's entire season anyway. So in the end, we were all wrong, but Nolan Jones is still a power hitter in cores. So, like, if he's up for auction, someone nominates him for a buck, I will go to $2 and hope that nobody bids me up for sure. But I think the hype train has come to a screeching halt for him as well. I know he's come back and he's kind of hit over the last few days. So he's been all right. He's not playing every day, but over the last three games, for what it's worth, 5-for-10, you know, with 3 RBI. So maybe he's cooking something there. Of course, all those games were in Coors. I don't know. Of that group, I'm still most in on Nolan Jones and I'm most out on Chaz McCormick, but it's not a very exciting group.
Yeah, I think, man, you're talking about a pretty small sample if you're going to tell me like Jones has been better lately. It dates back to,
I mean, like within the last 72 hours.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can go back further than that. You can go back to about, I don't know, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. He's got a 3.28 WOBA over the last like 2.5 weeks, almost 3 weeks. If you take it down to just 2 weeks, it's a 3.64 WOBA. Like I said, most of those games were at home. He also has zero home runs over that time. So it's all just BABIP, which, to be fair, you play in Coors. People talk about Coors as a power park. Coors is a power park, but it is not some crazy outlier power park like it once was, because the humidor and all this stuff, there's other parks that are actually better power parks, but it is a BABIP haven. It is a huge outfield. Have you ever been to a game at Coors?
No, never even been to Colorado.
You should go to Colorado. It's a good state. But yeah, you go to a game at Coors and, like, I don't know. Like, so this year I went to Great American Ballpark this year, and you definitely, like, you walk into Great American Ballpark and you're like, it's cozy here. You can tell it's small. You walk into Coors and you're like, how does anybody ever hit a home run here? How does it ever happen? Because the outfield is so big and it feels big. And then you see a game happen, you watch batting practice or anything like that, and you're like, oh, right, the air is thin, the ball travels, I get it. But there is so much ground to cover in that outfield that you totally get how people end up with high BABIPs there. I've liked Nolan Jones forever, right? He came up through the Cleveland system. I was a big fan. I was very unhappy when they traded him. I spent all last year being like, I cannot believe they gave this guy away. What a mess. And then, of course, this year, we didn't miss him. I'll say that. But, you know, you look at what he did last year and this year, and the biggest gap is in his home run per fly ball rate. He also hit a lot more ground balls, maybe related to the injury, but a lot more ground balls and a much lower home run per fly ball rate. His hard hit rate is actually higher this year than last year. The barrel rate is down, but that's going to be related to the ground balls, right? Ground balls aren't barrels. And so if your ground ball rate goes up, your barrel rate's going to go down. If he starts lifting the ball better while hitting it hard at the rate he did this year, that barrel rate will go right back up. And his BABIP came way down. 401 last year, 325 this year. I think he can be a pretty high BABIP player. And like, I look at his projections, like his strikeout rate and walk rate are like, he walks a lot. He also strikes out a lot. That was true last year. It's true this year. And it's probably going to be true next year. And I look at his projections and they're nothing like his 2023 season, but they're nothing like this year either. And he is still like, he doesn't turn 27 till May. Like you said, he's still a power hitter at Coors. I think I'm with you. I think he is of this group the guy I am most likely to be back in on. I'm out on McCormick. I was out on McCormick, and then people talked me into him in the offseason. I picked him up a couple places, and I was immediately like, oh, why did I do that? So I'm definitely out on him now. I've been down on Morel, and while I get what you're saying about he did provide some value this year, because he did absolutely nothing this year to convince somebody who was down on him a year ago to be any higher on him today than they were then. Literally the only thing this season that he did that's like, oh, maybe he does have a future, is that the Rays asked for him in a trade. That's it. Like, there's nothing he did on the field. And maybe the fact that the Rays asked for him is enough for me to like give him another look in spring and we'll see how he's doing. But
yeah, he's not a pitcher. I'm not as interested.
Fair enough. And it goes out to I think.
No, go ahead on Encarnacion Strand. It's the last guy I want to bring up.
Yeah, I was just going to say on Encarnacion Strand, I think he's like, this is just a lost season for him. I think whatever you thought of him a year ago, you could maybe be down a little bit, right? Slow the hype train down a bit, but this was just a lost season.
Yeah. Yeah. So Encarnacion, Strand, and Jones still in on McCormick out. Geloff, maybe I was a little unfair. Because if I'm gonna be fair to Morel and say he was useful, then I guess you have to say the same thing about Zach Geloff, because objectively speaking, he maybe, I guess, had a better season. But it's just there's nothing in the runs and RBI department. Like, I mean, we're talking nothing, and we're combining that with a 35% strikeout rate. So, like, you have to be the most desperate dude for speed in the middle infield position to roster him. And there was not any real prospect pedigree there. It is as fun as Oakland was at times this year, it's still Oakland. It's still not a great lineup. So that's why I was so harsh on him. But to be fair, if I'm going to say that Morel at times was useful, I have to say the same thing about Zach Geloff.
So let me throw one thing at you for Geloff. Okay. He had 269 plate appearances at home, 273 on the road. Right? Pretty even numbers. He had 6 home runs at home. He had 11 on the road. He had 18 RBIs at home, 31 on the road. 28 runs at home, 31 on the road. The stolen bases are more even, 14 at home, 11 on the road. His overall line at home was a 60 WRC plus, a 240 WOBA. On the road, it was a 314 WOBA, a 105 WRC plus. He is about to be playing in a park that we don't really know exactly how it's going to play, because we don't really know exactly where they're going to be playing. This stuff is still a little fuzzy since the situation in Oakland / Sacramento / whatever is such a mess. But I can guarantee you it'll be a park that fits him better than Oakland does, because Oakland is a terrible park for him, right? I mean, he is a guy who wants to hit the ball in the air hard, and you can't, that's just a really bad thing to do in Oakland, unfortunately. And so I think it's a really bad thing to do in Oakland unless you hit the ball really hard, and he doesn't. So that is a knock on him, is he does not hit the ball that hard, right? He has an 89.2 average exit velocity, 109.1 max EV, good, not great. Barrel rate, 8.9%, good, not great. Hard hit rate, 37.5%, good, not great. I suspect that getting out of Oakland is going to be very, very good for him. And so I do think he will be on my radar sort of where he was this year, which is if he's there at the end of an auction and I can pick him up for a buck, I will. I think there are worse ways to spend a dollar.
There's definitely worse ways to spend a dollar. I love hearing the home road splits. That makes me feel better about him than worse, right? Obviously. Right. It's hard for me to get over a 35% strikeout rate from a guy who has shown us not a whole lot. But that is some reason for optimism for sure.
Yeah. Let's take a look. Actually, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have a few more names. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. We've gone through a bunch of names, got a few more. We're already over 50 minutes here. And so I was going to do one more like group of names, but instead, let's just sort of rapid fire and see how many of these we get through. I'm going to throw out a name. The question that we need to answer, and we can do analysis if we want to, we can not do analysis if we want to, is are you out, or is this are you buying low on the production this year? So, Davis Schneider, last year, 7.31 points per game and 116 at-bats. This year, 3.02.
I'm out.
Yeah, I am as well. He also carries that really high strikeout rate. He also doesn't hit the ball. He actually, like, if you look at his fly ball, his exit velocities and his strikeout rate, he looks a little bit like Geloff. But he doesn't, like, he's doing it in a park where he should be able to do it at this point. And so there's less optimism because he's not suddenly going to end up in a much better situation next year.
I know Barger has struggled, but like, I kind of like Wagner. I kind of like Barger, Bobichet's going to be back. I don't know if Schneider is going to be playing every day. He's already done.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Schneider does have 0.6 F4 in 447 plate appearances. Gelof's had more plate appearances, 542, but he has 1.4 F4. He's a little bit of a better defender. He's been a little bit more valuable offensively. Oakland still doesn't really have big expectations. They don't really have anyone else replacing him. I do not expect them to spend money to replace him. So I think that's another piece of this is, yeah, if it's the end of my draft and I have to pick one of these two guys to be my backup second baseman for a buck.
Oh, for sure, Gelof. Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's not close for me.
Brandon Drury. Bit of an up and down career. Last year, 485 at bats, 5.34 points per game. You would have to skip to finish. He's down to 1.43 this year. I've been generally out on Drury anyway, so this is not a hard one for me. He's also 32 years old, so it's like, I don't know. There's a lot to be concerned about moving forward. And I don't know that I buy. I mean, we talked earlier about those late career breakouts. He was 28 when he had his first sort of above average season, really. Yeah. And so, no, that's not totally true. He had a couple early in his career, but he was very bad for a while. Then he had a good season at 28, which was a partial season. Then he had two actually really good seasons last 2 years and fell off again. And I'm just sort of like, I don't really want to ride that roller coaster. So, yeah, I'm out.
Nope. I'm out as well. Nice last 2 years, but I'm out.
Last year, 62 at-bats, 6.54 points per game. This year, 144 at-bats with 3.06 points per game for Evan Carter.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on the price because I already thought he was going too high. Like, I don't know, man, but he was in the same sentences as, like, Lankford and Churio and stuff. And back when we thought Holiday and Caminero would break spring training, like, he was, like, in that group. And even though he had shown more than all of those guys, to be fair, like I still thought that was too much. So I don't know if he's going to be cheap enough for me to go in. But if he is, then sure, because he's a top prospect, right? I mean, he lost his prospect status, but he was a top 10 overall prospect in baseball. He was still super young. And I love guys who play for Texas. It's good offense. But we're going to have to come down significantly from where the price was going into this year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I'm still a big Carter fan. My guess is the price will come down enough that I will be in because I'm a big fan of his. But yeah, the hype has to die down a bit. I don't think we have to spend a ton of time on this guy, but he was over 5 points per game last year. Adam Duvall, 5.04 points per game down to 5.35 down to 2.07 this year. I assume you're out on Duvall.
Sadly.
Yeah. Red Sox. Wilmer Flores, 5.21 points per game last year, 2.45 this year.
Yeah, someone would have to hold me at gunpoint to draft Wilmer Flores.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. He's been, to me, a guy who mostly is useful as a like a platoon bat and the small side of a platoon.
I thought you were going to say as a player on my opponent's team.
That too. Mitch Garver, 5.79 points per game last year, 3.09 this year.
Yeah, I really feel bad for Mitch Garver. This year really seemed to take a toll on him, but I have to be out.
And then, let's see, who else on this list? I don't know. Let's do this. We're really at the end of our time here, and so I'm gonna read off. Well, actually, let me do a couple more here. I'm not going to ask you if you're in or out on this guy because I think everybody is and should be in on this guy. What I am going to ask you is how early would you take him? So last year, 6.39 points per game. This year, 4.75 for Julio Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah, early. I think I got to see draft boards because I'm really bad at just like thinking this through. But if he's available in the second round, I think I'm taking him. Looked like I think one thing is clear. He's so far in his career a very slow starter, and then things were taken off, and then he got that high ankle sprain, and it just kind of fell apart. But as he gets further and further from that injury, it looks like he's starting to hit again. I'm still so in on Julio Rodriguez. So there's just so many good players in the first round that, like, if I don't have to deal with that slow start, I'm going to take those guys. But if Julio Rodriguez is there in the second round, I'm absolutely taking him.
Yeah, I could totally see that. Let's see, where were we on this list? Who else is worth mentioning? What about Adelis Garcia?
Yeah, yeah, our Lawrence Butler comparison from a month ago. I'm not ready to be out on Adelis. It was a bad season, but it felt like it was kind of similar to Atlanta, just not as dramatic because Atlanta's offense was just so freaking good last year. And it's funny saying that because it's actually the Rangers who won the World Series. But it feels like it was just a down year across the board for the Rangers. I'll be back in on Adelis, I think. I think you'll get a nice discount there for a guy who's still a power speed combo.
All right. And then let's do one last pair of players, because I just feel like putting them both out there. Two young first basemen that people were high on. Try not to be too much of a homer here. But yeah. Last year, Tristan Casas was 5.41 points per game. Spencer Torkelson was 5.06. They're both way down this year. Are you in on one of them and not the other? Are you in on both? And if you're in on both, are you more in on one?
I'm definitely in on both, and I'm definitely more in on Tristan Casas. I know I am the resident Red Sox fan, but folks may recall I am usually extremely pessimistic about Red Sox players in fantasy, and I very rarely roster them. But in Casas' case, I'm just very excited. He's dealt with injuries. That much is clear, and the strikeout rate is high. I don't think he's really had a chance to get his feet under him. With that said, he's had a 3-home-run game. He followed that up with like a 4-walk game or something. The dude is a menace at the plate. Torque, I'm still in on. It's just like, what Torkelson are we going to get on any given night? But former number one overall pick. Detroit's kind of fun, clearly. I'm still in on both. And I definitely prefer Casas probably by a pretty significant margin.
Yeah, I think that is correct on preferring Casas by a significant margin. I am definitely still in on both. I think it is worth noting that Torkelson, since he came back from his sojourn to the minor leagues in June and July, he came back up August 17th, 144 plate appearances since then. He has a 125 WRC plus. That is not like he's suddenly the best player in baseball, but that is
very good.
The kind of production we were waiting for, right? I mean, he's doing the thing we wanted him to do. It is still not enough to be sort of elite first base production, but it is a guy I want on my team, especially because he's still just, he just turned 25 in August. He's not done developing. I also think we're going to see this kind of end of the season can have a really positive impact on young players. Like, I'm really excited about this for Torque, for Riley Green, for Parker Meadows, for Kerry Carpenter, Jace Young, Colt Keith, like all those guys. There's a whole roster of guys out there that I'm like, they are probably not going to win the World Series because most teams don't win the World Series. That's just how it goes. But they're going to have spent the entire offseason thinking like, oh, that's what it feels like to win. Like, that's what it feels like to be one of the best teams. How do I capture that again? And I think they're going to, I'm excited about this young team.
Just put those White Sox on the schedule for another 20 games. And that's how you get there.
I wish we could like, as a Guardians fan, we had taken advantage of that because so you play the teams in your division 13 times. The Guardians went, I think, 8-5 against the White Sox. The White Sox were better against the Guardians than they were against the rest of the league.
Well, even with that said, the Guardians were still significant better than the division. This impacted the Royals and the Tigers and the Twins way more than it impacted the Guardians. It's just as a White Sox fan dealing with these dragons, seeing another division feast on the White Sox, it hurts.
Yeah. I will say, in defense of my fellow Central Division fans, Boston's going to finish a good 5-6 games back of those teams. And even 5 games back, like those teams, I think at least 2 of them, I think the Twins and the Royals went like 12-1 against the White Sox. Had they gone, instead of 12-1, had they gone 8-5, even 7-6, there's a good chance the Red Sox are still.
Yeah, but then you're taking into account things like, you know, how much did their bullpens get saved because their number five starter went 8 shutout against the freaking White Sox. This is an indictment, not on the Royals and on the Tigers. I hope those fans understand. I'm happy they made the playoffs. But that White Sox team is an embarrassment. It's an abomination. And there's no debating. It clearly warped the standings in the American League. Like, look, the Red Sox were not going to sniff the World Series this year. That's not what I'm upset about. But come on, the Tigers and the Twins and the Royals and the Guardians were like all going to make the playoffs at one point. And then there's one team that wouldn't in that division, and they were the worst team in MLB history. Do not tell me that had no impact.
Well,
one more name.
It had to. But yeah.
Can we do one more name here? Sure. Josh Lowe of the Tampa Bay Rays. He's not quite Nolan Jones in that, like, he had this monster year in 2023 and then completely disappeared off of Earth in 2024, because he is going to surprisingly finish with at least 25 steals. We'll see if he can rattle off any more in the last day. But it was a disappointment. He was just like, who did I just say? Who's Nolan Jones? Just like Nolan Jones, he was a top 100 pick. He wasn't going quite as high as Jones, but he's still going really high. And managers were disappointed. I think I'm back in on Josh Lowe next year. I think he might be the second best hitter behind Junior Caminero on the Tampa Bay Rays. So I'm back in on Josh Lowe, but was curious to flush him out here before we called it.
Yeah, I think the concern I have with Lowe is he made those strides last year in large part because he brought his strikeout rate down from a painful 33.3 in 2022 down to 24.8% last year. He also had a high BABIP and things like that, but it was really that strikeout rate that made the difference. And it went right back up this year. It's 31.5%. And I'm a little concerned when I look at, like, his contact rate and his swinging. Like, his swing strike rate was actually worse last year than it was this year or the year before.
It's really
his
weird.
His contact rate got better last year, but stayed the same this year, more or less. The big difference in the lower strikeout rate last year is called strikes were down because he saw fewer pitches in the zone. And I worry that strikeout rate is just sort of here to stay, that last year was the outlier. That said, you know, we'll see what the price is, because the talent is there and the upside is there. And I don't think he's not Luis Robert, right? Who I think is going to be easily within the top 100. I know you were saying, you know, 6th, 7th round. I actually think he's going to go higher than that. I think he's going to be a top 50 pick is my guess. Wow. He's also not a guy like Zach Geloff, who I think you're gonna be able to pick up when you're bored at the end of the draft. So he's going to be somewhere in between, and I just don't know where that's going to land. If people are like, hey, he still stole 25 bases and hit 10 home runs, and that was in 2/3 of a season-ish. So, yeah, give me 15-35, and he goes in the top 100. I'm probably going to be out. And if people are like, he strikes out a ton, the bat was really bad, do I really want to draft this guy when all he can bring is, you know, all he can bring me is steals and plays for a team that is perfectly happy to just like move on from a dude when they're struggling and plug someone else in. Like, if that happens and he's going outside the top 150, I'll probably be taking him a lot. So it'll just depend where he lands.
Yeah, I think I agree with all of that. He hasn't shown enough at the major league level for me to completely sell out and just buy him, but I still like the bat.
Yep, that makes sense. Well, I think we've gone through a good chunk of this list. There's some other names that we could have talked about, but we covered a lot of names here. So hopefully people enjoyed it. Pete, hopefully you enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
Always, right?
Yeah. I love talking some Tristan Casas. We can do a whole episode on him next time.
Maybe we will. But anyways, for those of you who listen, thank you for listening. Hope you had a good season. Hope you won some titles. We'll be back with you. Start talking about the offseason next week.